Chapter 6. Leadership is about self-awareness. The cornerstone. As the saying goes, self-awareness is the cornerstone of leadership. Without awareness, a leader has little, if any, hope of being an effective leader. So how do you get to be self-aware? The key questions here for you as a new leader include, who am I really? How do I know myself? What are my values? What do I stand for? What is my mission statement? What are my strengths? How do I play to my strengths? And how do others see me? Roy T. Bennett said, strong people have a strong sense of self-worth and self-awareness. They don't need the approval of others. Know thyself. What areas would it be good to know about yourself? What aspects would you feel comfortable talking to others about? Number one, personality. How would you describe your general personality? How would others describe you? What do family and friends say about you? What do colleagues or work peers say about you? There are a variety of personality tests which are generally used by individuals to discover exactly who they are and what makes them tick. One such personality test, which is frequently used, for instance, is the Myers-Briggs Personality Type Indicator, the MBTI. The client who undergoes this test has to make a choice between two behaviour options. At the end of this process, a score is presented based on four sets of scales: introvert versus extrovert, intuitive versus sensate, thinker versus feeler, and judger versus perceiver. The focus, for example, of being declared to be an ESFJ or an ENFP would be on where your energy is directed, how you process information and make decisions, and how you plan your life. My students in the MBA course that I taught told me about a free website for the MBTI. You might like to complete it and see how your personality style presents. It is found at https://www.humanmetrics1j-types1.htm. An understanding of these elements would be a most useful aid in getting to grips with the type of person you are, and by extension, with the kind of leader you might be and how you might connect with others with a different personality style. Carl Jung once said, your visions will become clear only when you can look into your own heart. Who looks outside dreams, who looks inside awakens. Number two, values. What are your values? What is important to you? What would you do if you were really wealthy and didn't have to worry about money? What do you stand for? What won't you stand for? What would you risk your life for? In other words, what you value as a person and what you place importance on are critical to your satisfaction at work. If, for example, you place a high value on honesty, yet you see the company or management acting in ways that are contrary to this value, then you may feel that such a discrepancy in values leaves you with no other option than to either intervene in some way or to leave. What are values? They are considered to be a person's principles or standards of behaviour. They constitute a judgment about what's important in life. They encapsulate our perspective on what life's priorities are all about. Can you see how important it might be to identify what your life values might be? Values are those things that really matter to each of us, the notions and beliefs we hold as special. Caring for others, for example, is a value. So is financial security or quality of life. Being taken seriously or being respected is very important to some people. So is feeling that we have made a difference to others or have left a mark on their lives in some way or contributed to their life. What are yours? Can you clearly define them and point them out? Most of us learned or acquired our values from our parents at home, or from our grandparents or those who raised us. We learned our values at church or in the synagogue or temple and at school. We formed them as we grew up, and sometimes we might change or alter our values as we grow older or more mature. A close relationship with a spouse or partner, for example, or a close relationship with one's children is not something that we would expect an adolescent to have as a priority. In order to have a real sense about who you are and to be confident in whom you are, you need to define your set of values. Perhaps you know them already, but just haven't taken the time to delineate them clearly. Perhaps you've kind of known what they are, but have never taken the time out to write them down. Perhaps you've just somehow taken it for granted that they're there, but you're not sure how that happened or what they are exactly. I personally see values as lighthouses for our journey in life. They act as beacons and help us to chart our journey. Of course, this doesn't mean that sometimes we might not make bad decisions or behave poorly, and when we do, we often get shipwrecked and end up on the rocks, as it were. So, values are there to guide us and protect us and assist us on our life journey. If you don't know where the lighthouses are and where the tricky regions are or where the reefs or the rocky outcrops are, then how are you going to negotiate life effectively? Joseph Campbell said, "The world is full of people that have stopped listening to themselves or have listened only to their neighbours to learn what they ought to do, how they ought to behave, and what the values are that they should be living for." You'll often find, too, that companies have a set of corporate values. These are often displayed in prominent places, or you'll read about them in their annual reports or on their websites. Sadly, though, they are often just words because the values don't translate into real action and the employees know it. "They ain't worth the paper they're written on," is the kind of comment sometimes made by staff. However, I recently gave a workshop in Melbourne for a building company, and they had a clear set of values on their website that did represent what they stood for. The employees that I talked to knew it, and one said that he had been trying to get into this company's workforce for some years because he knew what they were about. He said that they were renowned for being a good company to work for. Interestingly, one of the values for this company was value to others. That says it all, doesn't it? So, if it's good enough for companies and corporations to have their set of values, then it's certainly good enough for the rest of us. If you're not able to define your set of values, then it is time that you set to work to craft them. What are your lighthouses? What's important to you? What do you stand for? What are your priorities in life? Perhaps the best way to start to consider your personal values is to review a values list and to begin to refine your own specific list. At the rear of this book is Appendix 1 titled Governing Values. Complete this exercise and work out your top 5 personal values. These are the values that you adhere to personally in your life. What have you got to lose? Furthermore, in Appendix 2 is a list of the 14 most common work values that people look for in a job. Try to rank order them, decide what are the top 5 values that you really need in a job in order to be satisfied. What might be number 1 is non-negotiable, and number 2 is prime, and so on. When you look for a job, it is critical that your career contains these aspects in order for you to be fulfilled. Number 3, talents. What are you good at? What do you receive compliments for? Where have you excelled in the past? Where have you been successful? What are some of your abilities? It makes simple sense to go towards work that uses your talents and abilities. If you are doing what comes naturally, you're more likely to be happy at work. And when you're happy at work, you'll be happier in life. Most people can do lots of things. What school subjects were your favourites? What are the things you like to do more than others? What brings a smile to your face? What do you always gravitate towards doing? What do people always tell you that you're good at doing? For example, are you good at dealing with people? If so, is it with individuals and one at a time or in groups? Or both? Perhaps you are good at taking instructions, serving or helping, or maybe diagnosing, treating or healing. Maybe you're more comfortable with teams or organizations, either communicating effectively with a group or perhaps leading others in an exercise, or maybe even managing or supervising a project or running a business. Perhaps instead you are good at dealing with information, data and ideas. Maybe that might be gathering or creating it via research or compiling information. Maybe it is through managing it, storing or retrieving it, or perhaps through putting it to an applied use. Perhaps you are good at dealing with things. This might include skills with materials, e.g. wood, metal, stone, gems, skills with objects, tools and instruments, skills with equipment, machinery or vehicles, skills with buildings, e.g. construction or modelling, or skills with growing things, including plants and animals. Regardless of your talents, as a leader, you need to own these talents, but also be prepared to put in the work to upskill the skills of your people and learn how to manage a team effectively. Number 4, passion. What do you love to do? What activities give you satisfaction? What excites you about life? What is your secret ambition? What are your hobbies? These are valuable clues to your passions. For example, I saw a young person who loved to write as well as to journal her thoughts and feelings, but she confessed that she hadn't done so for ages and that she had missed it. When she picked it up again, she felt that she had regained part of herself, and she began to consider how writing might also become a larger part of her life in terms of a possible career. Another client I recently saw found it so rewarding to go bushwalking. He was re-energized when he was out experiencing nature. He also loved camping and being away from the bustle of the city. Another person loved sailing and couldn't wait for the summer season to be on his boat, pitting his skills against the weather and the elements, as well as competing against other boats. A retired accountant I met recently told me that in his retirement he had taken up an activity that he had always wanted to pursue, namely oil painting. He was loving it and had decided to take lessons as well. Alternatively, what gets up your nose? What can't you stand? What aspects or features of our society really frustrate, annoy, or upset you? In other words, are there any issues that you feel strongly about? For example, I recently saw a woman who felt very strongly about young children being abused, so much so that she decided to work in a not-for-profit organization devoted to young people in need. Another person I saw felt very strongly about homelessness and decided that as a first step that she would work in a volunteer capacity for an organisation that renders assistance to the homeless. Knowing yourself is knowing what your passions might be. Number 5, strengths. I have been at pains to say to all my clients, as well as to the MBA classes that I taught, that all of us need to play to our strengths. What happens when you work to your strengths? Dr. Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi showed that real satisfaction occurs when we are in the flow. Some refer to it as being in the zone. Professor Marty Seligman calls it the engaged life, being at one with the music, i.e. being totally absorbed in what you're doing so that time seems to stop. Dr. Ken Robinson calls it being in your element. In his book by the same name called The Element, it is defined as the meeting point between natural aptitude and personal passion. It's the place where the things we love to do and the things we are good at both come together. Gary Lockwood once said, "Play to your strengths." It's those times when you're so preoccupied by what you are doing that you lose track of time and you can't believe that so much time has really passed. Typically, you're using your strengths and your talents and you're just caught up in the activity itself. It could have to do with being involved with your hobbies or interests, or even perhaps with romance and relationships. Maybe you're writing, sketching, working on your car, giving a presentation, building a website, babysitting the grandchildren. Whatever it is, you're in your element. These activities give us energy rather than drain us as our jobs often do. People become more alive because of these pursuits. There is little doubt that being in the zone increases happiness and satisfaction for people. Do you know which of your strengths and talents have the effect of allowing you to be in your zone? When are you in your element? What do you need to do to experience more of being in your element? So, play to your strengths. That's easy to say, but can you define them? Number 6, character strengths. More particularly, what are your natural character strengths? What are those strengths of character that you possess that make the good life possible? That is an interesting question. According to a 1999 survey by Public Agenda, adults in the United States, and in most westernized countries I would expect, cited not learning values as the most important problem facing today's youth. From surveys of this kind, together with a push from the positive psychology movement, came the development of 24 character strengths that fell under 6 main areas of what were termed virtues, namely wisdom, courage, humanity, justice, temperance, and transcendence, i.e. the meaning of life. Without getting too technical, character strengths are the psychological ingredients that underpin the 6 main virtues in life. After thorough research and analysis starting in 2000 and spanning 3 years, a classification of 24 prime strengths were devised, including such positive traits as bravery, kindness, fairness, and hope. It's called the VIA Survey of Character Strengths, and you can do the survey yourself by going to the website listed below. It's https://www.viacharacter.org. Once you're on that page, click on the button that says Take the Free VIA Survey. What are your top 5 strengths? What do they say about you? Do they fall into certain virtue areas, or are they spread across a number of areas? Number 7, purpose and destiny. What were you born to do? What is your unique mission in life? What does God want you to do? What are your unique opportunities? Where can you make a difference? I know that these can be very difficult questions to ask and to answer. What is my purpose and why am I here? I also don't expect many of you to be able to trot out an answer to these questions immediately. However, having said that, they are important questions to ask and to answer. The most important thing to know is that your career path and your move into leadership should put you on a trajectory that is closer to, if not directly on, your right path. In a nutshell, your right path has to do with your personal mission in life and to do with the reason you are here. The closer you align yourself to that path, the less stress you are bound to encounter. Identifying your right path then becomes a top priority. Being on a right path will lead to greater success, to career satisfaction, and more effective leadership. When you are on your right path, obstacles will be fewer and easier to overcome. The battles you fight will at least be the right battles. Once you're on your right path, things will start to fall into place. Your right path is like a roadmap that helps to point the way forward. Without a roadmap in life, you'll be like a ship without a rudder. You will be blown this way and that. The slightest breeze will knock you off course. So how do you go about seeking to examine and to answer this question in relation to your purpose or destiny? What is your mission statement? Yes, I know that companies and corporates have them, but if it's okay for them, then it's certainly okay for each of us. Thomas Carlyle says, "A man without a purpose is like a ship without a rudder, a waif, a nothing, a no man." I really like the exercise that Dr. Stephen Covey has to offer as a way of allowing us to get more in touch with our destiny and our purpose. He suggests finding a place where you can be alone and uninterrupted. Have a pen and paper with you because you'll be doing some writing. Relax, clear your mind of stuff, and be open to the experience. Now, in your mind's eye, see yourself going to a funeral of a loved one. Picture yourself driving to the funeral parlour or chapel, parking the car and getting out. As you walk inside the building, you notice the flowers and the soft organ music. You see the faces of friends and family as you pass along the way. You feel the shared sorrow of losing, the joy of having known that radiates from the hearts of the people gathered there. As you walk down to the front of the room and look inside the casket to pay your last respects, you suddenly come face to face with yourself. This is your funeral, 3 years from today. All these people have come to honour you, to express the feelings of love and appreciation for your life. As you take a seat and wait for the service to begin, you look at the program in hand. There are four speakers. The first is from your family, immediate and also extended, children, brothers, sisters, nephews, nieces, aunts, uncles, cousins, and grandparents who have come from all over to attend. The second speaker is one of your friends, someone who can give a sense of who you are as a person. The third speaker is from your work or profession. And the fourth is from your church, sport, or community organisation where you've been involved in service. Now, think deeply. What would you like each of these speakers to say about you and your life? What kind of husband, father, wife, mother would you like their words to reflect? What kind of son, daughter, or cousin? What kind of friend? What kind of working associate, peer, or colleague? What character would you like them to have seen in you? What contributions, what achievements would you want them to remember? Look carefully at the people around you. What difference would you like to have made in their lives? In Appendix 3, take a few minutes to write down your impressions. After you've done that exercise, now consider your own eulogy. What do you want your eulogy to consist of? What would matter most at the end of your life? What would you want to be remembered for? Write it out in full. Be proud of it. Own it. This is your destiny. This is your purpose. Without a vision of where you are supposed to go, your life will seem like a bunch of random events. Let it not be a wasted life. Choose how you'd like to be remembered, and then live life according to that script. This life is not a dress rehearsal. This is it, so live it fully and do your best. Feedback is the breakfast of champions. As Tony Robbins says repeatedly, feedback is the breakfast of champions. How do we know ourselves? Typically, through how others might see us. Naturally, asking for feedback from those around us can be a daunting exercise for some, and certainly for most it creates some sort of anxiety. A leader, therefore, that refuses to seek feedback and understand how they are being perceived probably shouldn't be a leader at all. This kind of behaviour, which is resistant to any kind of feedback, is probably indicative of someone who's either very insecure or else indicative of a huge ego who knows it all and who can't be told anything. Either way, it is hardly a recommendation for leadership. Of course, how others see us might not always be accurate, but if there is a consensus across various people, it may well be more accurate than you think. An effective exercise to ascertain whether how you see yourself is comparable to how others see us is by using the Johari window exercise. Appendix 4 outlines this particular exercise. In this case, it's probably best to find a colleague or work peer, either from your current or previous workplace, who you can trust and who is happy to give you feedback and engage in this exercise. What is your leadership style? To help you further become aware, it might be helpful to complete the leadership diagnostic. You can find it at https://leadershipcoaching.com.au/leadership-diagnostic. Although this is a self-report instrument, it ought to give you an idea about your specific strengths as a leader and then help you focus on those aspects that are lacking or ineffective in order to shore up your overall abilities. Chapter 6 Summary. Leadership is about self-awareness. The cornerstone. As the saying goes, self-awareness is the cornerstone of leadership. Without self-awareness, a leader has little, if any, hope of being an effective leader. Know thyself. What areas would it be good to know about yourself and therefore feel comfortable talking to others about such aspects? Tips are given about how you can explore each of the areas below. 1. Personality. 2. Values. 3. Talents. 4. Passion. 5. Strengths. 6. Character strengths. 7. Purpose and destiny. Feedback is the breakfast of champions. How do we know ourselves? Typically, through how others might see us. Of course, how others see us might not always be accurate, but if there is a consensus across various people, it may well be more accurate than you think. Do you have the courage to ask for feedback? What is your leadership style? Complete the leadership diagnostic to give you more information about your strengths.